Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. Hi, I'm Amy Goodman. This month, Democracy Now! Turns 27. Since our very first broadcast in 1996, Democracy Now! Has been committed to fearless, independent journalism. At this critical moment when press freedom is under attack, our reporting is more important than ever. To celebrate our 27th anniversary, please donate today at democracynow.org. We're counting on you. Thank you so much. This is Democracy Now!
Norfolk Southern and the other freight rail companies need to stop fighting us every time we try to do a regulation.
Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg has visited East Palestine, Ohio for the first time since a Norfolk Southern train carrying toxic chemicals derailed 3 weeks ago, blanketing the town with a toxic brew of spilled chemicals and gases. It was 100% preventable. That's what the National Transportation Safety Board says about the accident. We'll go to Ohio for the latest. Presidential candidate Donald Trump was also in East Palestine this week. We'll talk to a union official about how Trump sided with railroad companies to roll back rail safety regulations. Will the Biden administration reverse those rollbacks? Then we go to the occupied West Bank, where Palestinians held a general strike Thursday after Israeli forces killed 11 Palestinians and injured 500 in a rare daytime military raid in Nablus.
It is a day of mourning period and a strike. How would we be able to work or eat or drink, and our brothers in Nablus are being killed? We should stand in solidarity with them, with the people of Nablus, and there should be a general strike. And thank God the strike is in all the West Bank and Gaza.
We'll speak to the Israeli journalist Amira Haas and the Palestinian activist Issa Amro, who was recently beaten by an Israeli soldier while being interviewed by the author Lawrence Wright. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United Nations General Assembly has voted in favor of a resolution condemning Russia over its invasion of Ukraine and demanding Moscow withdraw its forces. Thursday's vote came on the eve of the first anniversary of the war.
The result of the vote is as follows. In favor, 141. Against, 7. Abstentions, 32. Draft resolution A/ES11/L7 is adopted.
China, India, and South Africa were among the 32 nations abstaining from Thursday's vote. China's foreign ministry called for an end to sanctions on Russia and for a negotiated end to the war. Ukraine's foreign minister, Dmytro Kuleba, said Thursday's vote showed support for Ukraine's resistance to Russian occupation extends beyond powerful Western nations.
This vote defies the argument that Global South does not stand on Ukraine's side, because many countries representing Latin America, Africa, Asia voted in favor today.
In Moscow, President Vladimir Putin pledged Thursday to strengthen Russia's nuclear forces with the deployment of a new generation of intercontinental ballistic missiles. Putin also promised to speed mass production of air and sea-based hypersonic missiles and other conventional weapons. Putin's remarks came 2 days after he said Russia was suspending much of its participation in New START, the last remaining nuclear arms reduction treaty between the U.S. and Russia. President Biden called the move a big mistake. Neither Russia nor the U.S. have signed or ratified the U.N.'s treaty on the prohibition of nuclear weapons. North Korea test-fired four long-range cruise missiles Thursday as part of another drill that Pyongyang says demonstrates its ability to counter an attack on the isolated nation. The test came as the U.S. and South Korea carried out a simulated military exercise in Washington, D.C., and a day after the U.S., Japan, and South Korea held a trilateral ballistic missile drill in the Sea of Japan. The war games followed earlier North Korean missile tests on Saturday and Monday. The U.S. will expand its troop presence in Taiwan by more than four times, according to the Wall Street Journal. The Pentagon will reportedly send between 100 and 200 more troops to train the Taiwanese military against the threat of a Chinese invasion or blockade of the island. Iran has acknowledged its enriched uranium to 84% purity for the first time, just below the weapons-grade level of 90%. But an Iranian nuclear official dismissed the idea it's part of a weapons program, saying it's a temporary side effect of producing 60% purity uranium and calling such accusations a conspiracy against Tehran. Israel's far-right Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has already threatened possible military action against Iran. Meanwhile, Germany's expelled two Iranian diplomats after an Iranian court sentenced a German-Iranian citizen to death earlier this week. Tehran is accusing journalist Jamshid Sharmat, who is also a U.S. resident, of plotting a deadly 2008 bombing and other terrorist activities. The Biden administration's released two more prisoners from the Guantanamo naval base in Cuba. Mohammed and Abdul Rabbani, two brothers now in their mid-50s, were repatriated to Pakistan after they were held without charge for two decades. The U.S. accused them of providing low-level logistical support to al-Qaeda, but never provided evidence in a court of law. Both brothers say they were tortured at a secret CIA prison in Afghanistan for about 550 days before they were transferred to Guantanamo in 2004. The U.S. continues to imprison 32 men at Guantanamo. Here in New York, representatives from all 193 UN member states are convening in hopes of agreeing on a new treaty to protect the world's oceans and their biodiversity. A round of talks last summer were suspended after participants were unable to reach an agreement on financing, among other issues. Earlier this week, actor and activist Jane Fonda addressed delegates at the UN headquarters.
This treaty that will lay the groundwork for creating 30% of the ocean into marine sanctuaries that cannot be fished in is so important. We have to save these creatures who basically are fighting to save us. They are our strongest allies in the fight against the climate crisis. The ocean is one of our strongest allies.
1 million customers in the Midwest were left without power amidst freezing temperatures Thursday as a historic winter storm brought extreme weather to most of the United States. About 75 million people in 29 states have faced winter weather advisories. In California, officials in Los Angeles and surrounding counties issued a rare blizzard warning through Saturday. Meanwhile, many southern states are experiencing record heat. Thursday's high temperature in Washington, D.C. topped 80 degrees Fahrenheit, shattering a 150-year-old record for the date. President Joe Biden has nominated former MasterCard CEO A.J. Banga to lead the World Bank. If approved, Banga would be the first ever Indian American and first Sikh American to lead either the World Bank or the IMF. He previously worked for Nestle, PepsiCo, and Citigroup, and now serves as vice chair at the Wall Street investment firm General Atlantic. The anti-corruption group, the Revolving Door Project, condemned the selection, writing, quote, President Joe Biden and Secretary Yellen have literally named the vice chairman of a rapacious international private equity firm to take his first job ever in public service at nearly the highest level in the world possible. Nothing in Banga's resume inspires confidence that he will turn the World Bank away from a path of neocolonialism and predation by global North corporations upon global South countries, they said.
A judge in Texas is expected to issue a ruling as soon as today that could block access to the common abortion medication mifepristone nationwide. Plaintiffs in the case are challenging the Food and Drug Administration's approval of the pill over two decades ago. The move would impact even states like New York and California, where abortion is still legal following the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Mifepristone is used in more than half the abortions provided by clinics and physicians in the United States. In January, the FDA announced retail and mail order pharmacies can now sell the abortion pill directly to patients with a prescription. In Florida, a petition seeking to release a pregnant woman from jail argues her fetus is being held in, quote, unlawful and illegal detention, unquote, and being deprived of its due process rights. Natalia Harrell, who's 8 months pregnant and charged with murder, also accuses the jail of endangering the fetus by failing to provide proper prenatal and medical care. The filing argues the fetus, quote, is a person under the Florida Constitution and the United States Constitution. So-called fetal personhood laws have been fundamental in the anti-abortion movement. Reproductive rights advocates say recognizing fetal personhood helps strengthen the criminalization of abortion. A new report by the United Nations finds one person dies during pregnancy or childbirth every 2 minutes, revealing an alarming setback in reproductive health in recent years in nearly all regions of the world. The report tracks these deaths from 2000 to 2020. Europe and North America, as well as Latin America and the Caribbean, had the largest increase of pregnancy or childbirth deaths from 2016 to 2020. But as a whole, these deaths continue to be largely concentrated in the poorest parts of the world and in countries impacted by conflict. In the United States, new research shows childbirth is deadlier for Black families, regardless of their socioeconomic background. Black pregnant people and their babies, even when wealthy, are still twice as likely to die than their white counterparts. Millions of people around the United States will lose their additional disbursement of federal food assistance starting next week, March 1st. The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, had increased benefits as part of the emergency response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Households will lose a minimum of $95 a month as families continue to face increased food prices, and data show at least 1 in 8 U.S. kids regularly face hunger. In Los Angeles, Harvey Weinstein was sentenced Thursday to 16 years in prison for rape. The sentence is to be served after his 23-year term stemming from his New York sexual assault conviction, effectively ensuring the one-time Hollywood mogul will spend the rest of his life behind bars. Weinstein's Los Angeles conviction was based on his assault of one survivor, though dozens have accused him of rape and other sexual crimes. Attorney Gloria Allred filed appeals on behalf of two survivors who were denied the right to deliver victim impact statements before the sentencing.
You may say, well, isn't it too late? He was sentenced today. It's never too late to argue or to assert a constitutional right that we think has been violated.
In Chicago, a court sentenced R. Kelly Thursday to 20 years in prison for child sex crimes. But the former R&B star and sexual predator will be able to serve all but 1 year of that sentence concurrently with a previous 30-year term handed down in New York for racketeering and sex trafficking. A victim impact statement read in court Thursday asked for the longest possible sentence for Kelly that was allowed under the law, with the survivor saying she'll be permanently scarred and that, quote, no amount of therapy will make me normal, she said. And in Alabama, hundreds of striking miners could soon return to work at the Warrior Met Coal Company after nearly 2 years spent on picket lines. The president of the United Mine Workers of America recently sent a letter to Warrior Met granting the company an unconditional offer to return to work on March 2nd while the two parties continue to negotiate a new contract. The offer to end the strike came after Warrior Met reported large profits due to the skyrocketing price of coal and after its success successfully use replacement workers to keep its mines running. The union called the strike in April of 2021. It's believed to be the longest in the history of Alabama, a so-called right-to-work state with powerful anti-union laws. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, 100% preventable. That's what the National Transportation Safety Board says about the toxic train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. We'll go to Ohio for the latest, and then to Palestine, Israel and Palestine. Stay with us.
All you folks like you own my life. You never made a sacrifice. Demons err on my trail. Standing at the crossroads of hell. I look to the left, I look to the right. Hands that grab me on the every side. Think I got my price. Bitch, I sell all that is mine. Think money rules and all else fails. Go sell your soul, keep your shell. I'm trying to protect what I keep inside.
Crossroads by Tracy Chapman. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg finally visited East Palestine, Ohio, Thursday, for the first time since a Norfolk Southern train carrying hazardous chemicals derailed earlier this month, blanketing the town with a toxic brew of spilled chemicals and gases. Buttigieg has faced widespread criticism for his response to the bomb train disaster in East Palestine, where residents fear their health has been put at risk from the spill and a controlled burn of the chemicals. Buttigieg's trip came a day after former President Trump visited East Palestine. Trump criticized President Biden for going to Ukraine this week instead of the site of the train derailment in Ohio. Trump made no mention of why he rescinded an Obama-era rule that would have required more sophisticated brakes on trains carrying hazardous materials. On Thursday, Buttigieg accused Trump of siding with the railroad companies while he was president.
They got their way on a Christmas tree of regulatory changes that the last administration made on its way out the door in December of 2020. I think they're getting their way on the fines being too low. I'm sorry, but if the biggest fine we can charge on a violation is $250,000 or less, and that's an egregious hazmat violation to get somebody killed, that is not enough for a multi-billion-dollar company.
Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg's visit to East Palestine, Ohio, came as the National Transportation Safety Board released a preliminary report on the train derailment, blaming a wheel bearing failure for the crash. NTSB Chair Jennifer Homendy described the derailment as 100% preventable.
But I can tell you this much, this was 100% preventable. We call things accidents. There is no accident. Every single event that we investigate is preventable. So our hearts are with you.
The Norfolk Southern train that derailed had 141 cars and stretched for 2 miles. There were just 3 crew members on board. We're joined now by 3 guests. Topher Sanders is a reporter at ProPublica covering railroad safety. His new article is headlined, "A Norfolk Southern Policy Lets Officials Order Crews to Ignore Safety Alerts." Gregory Hines joins us from Washington, D.C. He's National Legislative Director at SMART, the International Association of Sheet Metal, Air, Rail, and Transportation Workers. And Emily Wright is on the ground in the East Palestine area in Ohio. She's development director for River Valley Organizing in Columbiana County. We welcome you all to Democracy Now! Let's start right there on the ground, Emily. A lot of visitors this week, right? You had former President Trump, you had Pete Buttigieg. But the question is, what's actually happening on the ground right now? Can you talk about how people are feeling, what their questions and demands are?
Yes, last night we had a town hall with independent scientists and environmental legal experts, lawyers, and a retired fire chief, Sill, who was a hazmat trainer and for decades. And people were very, very happy that someone was just listening to them and answering their questions. People's questions are, you know, what is Norfolk Southern going to do right now to help us? Because, you know, a lot of them are involved. We're not doing any type of class action lawsuit or anything like that. We're just offering free legal clinics that are going to be coming up for people to get unbiased advice that is not soliciting. But people are concerned about, do they make decisions now because they don't have the money and they need the money? Do they wait to make decisions? You know, are their families safe? You know, they have 50% of the people that were at the meeting last night raised their hand that they have well water. And at this point, the only they're still getting instruction to drink bottled water because they're not completely sure it's safe. So everybody just really wants questions answered. And I think everybody is not really looking at even the high profile visits. They more just want action. You know, we give a lot of people are pointing fingers right now. But everybody is pretty disgusted with everybody. I mean, you talked about how Trump rolled back those safety regulations. Then we have 2 years of the Biden administration where they had a chance to, you know, reinstate those, and they didn't. And so people are upset with all political officials right now. They're upset that our governor and our House representative came and took a sip of water in East Palestine as a political stunt and, you know, said the water's safe. But people are waking up in those same area, in that same homes, with rashes and nausea and asthma symptoms in the morning from just being exposed to, you know, all of the surface and, you know, soil contaminants right now. So, you know, there were a lot of people that are visibly upset and, really feel like they're not being represented on, you know, all levels, local, state, and federal government. So people are going to be taking action. They're going to be writing letters, making calls. We're going to be, you know, doing more petitions because this is, unfortunately, our safety in Appalachia is something that can change from administration to administration. So what we're going to push for at River Valley, you know, also is change at a congressional level. We need laws made. We need things that can't be taken away by executive order or, you know, placed by that. So that's what we're really pushing for, is lasting change from this. And it needs to be bipartisan. Everybody needs to get at the table with this.
So you held a town hall last night. Tonight, I know Aaron Brockovich is holding a meeting, who took on PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, what, 30 years ago for contamination in California. On Wednesday night, CNN hosted its own town hall meeting in East Palestine. This is one local resident, Jim Stewart, addressing the Norfolk Southern CEO, Alan Shaw.
Came home. The other day, I put the garage door up. We pulled in the garage, got out of the car, put the garage down. As soon as we got out of that car, the smell came back to us right away. Instant headache. Now, I'm 65 years old, a diabetic, AFib heart disease, everything. Now, did you shorten my life now? I want to retire and enjoy it. How are we going to enjoy it? You burned me. We were going to sell our house. Our value went poof. You know, do I mow the grass? Can I plant tomatoes next summer? What can I do? I'm afraid to. You know, and it's in the air. Every day I cough. A little cough here, a little cough there. I've never had that. You know, I got rashes on my cheeks and all of my arms from the derailment. I don't call it a derailment. I call it a disaster.
Emily Wright, talk about what people are feeling. I mean, he's diabetic. He's 65 years old. This was the participant in the CNN town hall challenging the Norfolk Southern CEO. And what about his presence on the ground, the head of Norfolk Southern, Alan Shaw, who says Norfolk Southern won't be leaving anytime soon?
That statement was almost verbatim, most things we heard last night. This is actually a really good time to highlight something new that's come up. So we're all aware that a health clinic was established for these people to go to. So they were told if they have these symptoms after, you know, the burn and the spill, to go to the free health clinic. And it was, I believe, through the, you know, the health department, Ohio and health department and our own. And this is not a clinic. People are not being treated. This is 100%. I have everything to back this up, but it is a doc. Just for background, I'm a registered nurse, and I've worked in the medical field for 20 years before this. So I can tell you that this is not an actual treatment clinic. This is a documentation and referral station. So there's no doctors, there's no lab tests, so no blood and urine tests, there's no diagnoses, and there's no real assessment. It's just usually a nurse. They have some type of toxicologist that may be there, and they refer you to somewhere. So there's no actual treatment. So these people are not only not receiving that, but we have several people that have come out this week to tell us that home health agencies aren't coming to these homes because they're worried about being exposed. And we have people that are, you know, bedridden, sick. One person, you know, they asked to remain anonymous, but they have a child that has total care needs, and they can't get home health to come out and take care of their child. And it's really been a struggle. So these are real things happening on the ground. And as far as, you know, for Alan Shaw, there's nothing that he can say that's going to make this better that he's willing to say, because this is what Norfolk Southern does. They come in, they have these things, they poison us. They keep it, they try to sweep it under the rug, and they think that we're all just stupid enough here, you know, we're all just hilljack enough to sit back. But I can tell you from the meeting last night that people are very angry, and they are ready to take action with not only policy changes, but they're ready to take action and make Norfolk Southern really does pay. Not just cleans up, not just gives some money, that they actually pay, because these people have lost everything. Their property value, they don't understand if their homes are safe or not. Like he said about mowing his grass, you know, with dioxin that falls on the ground after these things. We had Stephen Lester talking last night at our town hall about this. And, you know, people are scared. They mow their grass because they're walking outside or in their homes or sitting on their couches, and they're noticing that they're feeling shortness of breath or sick because the particulates are coming up. So people are not being properly taken care of, and it's not enough. It's a good first step that the EPA forced Norfolk Southern to clean this up right. It's a good step that they're going to monitor that, but it's not enough. It's the first step. And instead of finger pointing right now, what I would really like everyone to do is get on the ball of doing immediate change through, you know, this administration and through the transportation department, and then working on congressional change, because we're tired of the finger pointing.
Emily, I want to bring in Gregory Hines, who's National Legislative Director at SMART, the International Association of Sheet Metal, Air, Rail, and Transportation Workers. So, Greg, this description of this train, we're talking about February 3rd, passed through three temperature sensors as it was going along. 2-mile-long train. The sensors are designed to alert problems like the hot bearing that eventually failed that day. But the only sensor, called a hot box detector, that registered a sufficiently high temperature to sound the alarm was the one less than a mile from the accident site, according to the NTSB initial report. 2-mile-long train. At least 20 of the cars are filled with toxic chemicals. And there are only three workers, engineers, conductors on board. The guy driving the train, a conductor, I'm not sure, you'll have to correct me on the titles, and a trainee. How is this possible? As people saw miles before, the wheels were on fire.
Well, first, let me say that my heart goes out to the people of East Palestine with this terrible accident. And the detectors that you speak of, there are no regulations requiring the railroads to have detectors at all. And there are no regulations requiring the railroads to calibrate and maintain those detectors. So it's we're part of the NTSB investigation, so there's only certain things I can say. But the crew was not alerted with any problem from the previous detectors. The detector that did find the problem, it happened.